Tesla jolted the truck market last year when it was the first to unveil its electric big rig, with CEO Elon Musk doing the honor of driving it on stage. But now it looks like it squandered that advantage, allowing serious competition into the race.
Sweden's Volvo raising forecasts Friday after sales beat expectations. Demand strong in Europe and the US, where it owns the Mack brand. Profit up to over $1.1 billion, its best ever third quarter. It's a very different story for car makers and their suppliers. Figures out earlier this week showed European auto sales down by almost a quarter in September.
Farm crowdy. The companies use videos and photographs to show off farms to prospective investors. They're willing to tie up some cash until harvest time and then collect a small return. The investors then decide how much they might want to pour into the farm, typically starting at around $300. That may not sound like much, and it's too small a sum to interest most banks, but it is enough to help keep a small farm going until that harvest. Farm Crowdy and another similar firm, Thrive Agric, advertise returns of around 12 to 20% for most investments.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Tuesday. It's October the 23rd and 5:11 in the morning. Thanks for being here with us again for another edition of The Opening Bell and another business day getting underway. We have a good show for you today on the program. Jeff Smith will be here from the Institute for Housing Studies at DePaul University, talking a little bit about the inequality of real estate opportunities, housing market inequality. We'll bring in Jeff momentarily here to begin the show. A little bit later in the program, Dave Mayer will be here from Mecham Auctions, and we'll talk about the business of auctions, specifically automobile auctions, and there is a special one coming up shortly. Dave will be here at about 5:40 this morning here on The Opening Bell. We'll also keep you up to date on the very latest news, weather, and sports as well. But first, let's begin on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. Looks like we're going to have a triple-digit loss when the opening bell rings later on Wall Street. Dow futures are off nearly 300 points this morning. That's good for a percent. NASDAQ and S&P futures off more than a percent and a half. The NASDAQ off almost a percent and a half this morning. The S&P off nearly a percent and a third. As we head to 8:30 Chicago time. Around the globe, markets are generally in the red in Europe, with the FTSE off nearly three quarters. The DAX is off 222 points, nearly 2% in Germany, and in France, markets off nearly a percent and a half. The CAC is off 72 points. And in Asia, rounding things out this morning, markets in the red there as well. The Nikkei is going to finish the day down 2.5 points or more, 604 points lower. The Hang Seng nearly 806 points lower, down 3%. The Shanghai off nearly 2.25. And oil this morning is trading at $68.41 a barrel. A couple of stories before we begin this morning. Yesterday, a judge in San Francisco conditionally denying Monsanto's request for a new trial. The company was sued by a school groundskeeper after he was diagnosed with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. He had claimed that he developed the condition from spraying the herbicide Roundup 30 times a year as part of his job. In August, a jury awarded him $289 million in damages. Monsanto, who manufactures Roundup, asked for a new trial. The judge said that the request was denied, but also lowered the amount of punitive damages in that case. Oil prices are down after Saudi Arabia promised that the kingdom will play a responsible role in energy markets, despite what's happening with the missing and presumed dead writer Jamal Khashoggi. West Texas Intermediate crude off a dime, $69.26 a barrel. The Saudi energy minister said the world's top crude oil exporter has no intention of cutting supplies in retaliation for possible sanctions that could be coming over the killing of the journalist, the death of the journalist. The spotlight's on the housing industry in this week's economic reports. Today we'll get a housing price index. New home sales are due out on Wednesday. Pending home sales, durable goods orders, and wholesale inventories will be out on Thursday. The first estimate of third quarter GDP as well. So we're having a few economic reports that could move the markets as we move into the middle part of the week. The American dream of home ownership still eludes many black people, and in some neighborhoods where most homeowners are black, home values have been decreasing. The focus on housing inequality this morning as we bring in Jeff Smith. He's the executive director of the Institute for Housing Studies at DePaul University. Jeff, good morning. Welcome to the opening bell.
Good morning.
This is the stats we pulled here, sort of general, not necessarily specific to Chicago, but I'm wondering what you think of that. This is a report that we saw recently of, I guess, generally the country as a whole, but is this a snapshot of Chicago as well?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the history of race and housing has been, you know, very long and complicated one throughout, you know, the last 100 years or so. And in recent years, it's really manifested itself in continued patterns of segregated home buying and racial inequality. And unfortunately, the foreclosure crisis that we've recently come out of, you know, broadly across the Chicago region and nationally has only exacerbated that inequality.
Yeah, and the figure of 1/5 of zip codes where most black homeowners live, where most homeowners are black, home values have decreased since 2000 compared with 2% where black homeowners are not the majority. That's according to a state line analysis of federal data. Jeff, is it racism? Is it banks not doing what they should to even things out? What would be the response here?
I mean, I think it's a, you know, complex mix of factors. I think you have to, you know, point to race as being obviously a clear issue. You know, the sad reality is that you have a lot of areas that are very good neighborhoods where you have a predominance of African-American homeowners, and white home buyers just don't buy in those neighborhoods, which has the effect of suppressing demand for housing in those areas and keeping prices low. And that has a ripple effect of when you look at the recovery of the market, those areas don't recover as quick. There are more underwater homeowners in those neighborhoods, which has the effect of causing, you know, continued distress on existing homeowners and leading to higher continued foreclosure levels, which, you know, has ongoing effects of affecting credit scores. And that has, you know, makes it more difficult for many African Americans to get mortgages, and so it's kind of like a package of factors that are causing this to happen.
And so, and two is the response, and the help and the solution going to be a mix of things as well.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think, you know, loosening credit standards a little bit. I mean, not to the extent, obviously, of the subprime mortgage crisis, but you know, improving access to credit and creating programs to help improve African-American home ownership rates, I think, is going to be important. Creating more opportunities for African-Americans to buy in other neighborhoods that aren't purely African-American suburban communities. Attracting white homeowners to those neighborhoods, I think, is important. Supporting, creating programs to support underwater homeowners so they can stabilize their financial situation. I think those are all pieces of the solution.
You mentioned the subprime, there, the housing crisis. I saw a report the other day where folks were standing in line to get some of those mortgages. I didn't check the demographic nature of it. I can't remember where this was at either. It was in another part of the country. We don't want to go back to that point, do we?
Well, definitely not. I mean, I think I saw the story you're referring to, and we definitely don't want to go back to the subprime era because that was a very unregulated mortgage industry where you saw a lot of abusive and you know, abusive tactics and abusive features of mortgages that created an unsustainable mortgage system. But conceptually, I think the idea of trying to be innovative and trying to create programs that help folks access home ownership is critical to narrowing that wealth gap that you alluded to, which between African Americans and white households, which really is a product of white households historically being able to access stable home ownership opportunities, and African American households really having more of a challenge in that regard. So I think creating programs that do facilitate that access is important. It's just they have to be sustainable. They've got to be, you know, fair programs, fair lending products.
We're on with Jeff Smith this morning, Executive Director of the Institute for Housing Studies at DePaul University. I want to talk more about the home inequity, home market inequity. Some experts say that it may not be worth it anymore for some black people to become homeowners, stay renters. Is that an opinion you would share or something else?
Well, I think that, you know, homeownership is always a goal. And I think, you know, when you think about this issue of inequality and wealth inequality, particularly between white households and African-American households, you know, one of the, you know, best ways to narrow that gap is to get more African-American households into sustainable homeownership opportunities. But, you know, I think that that keyword is sustainable. And so what we had in the early parts of the 2000s were unsustainable mortgage products that were targeted towards African-American homeowners or borrowers to African-American neighborhoods. And the unsustainability of those products really is what led to this foreclosure crisis in neighborhoods. And so that's, again, set back that the goal of trying to narrow that gap through homeownership. So I think that's still, broadly speaking, in the long term, the goal. But to get there in a sustainable way, there may be a process where, you know, renting is still a the way that people find housing for a period of time while they build up equity, build up savings, and other ways to build up credit to access homeownership in a more sustainable way. So I think it's a balance. I think it's both. But over the long term, homeownership still has to be a piece of that.
We often hear the word gentrification used, and perhaps that's one of the solutions here. That often has a dirty connotation to it, a negative connotation to it. Is gentrification part of the answer here as well, or no?
Well, I think that, you know, when you think about gentrification, the key there is less prices going up rapidly in neighborhoods and more displacement that is the result of that rapid price appreciation, and also secondarily who benefits from that rapid price appreciation. So I think, you know, if you just look at a very narrow example, if you can improve African-American homeownership rates in a neighborhood like, say, Woodlawn on the south side of Chicago, where the Obama Presidential Center is being built, if you can get African-Americans into sustainable homeownership opportunities in that historically African-American neighborhood, you can, limit potential gentrification or displacement in that neighborhood due to rising values, and you can help those new homeowners benefit from that investment. So I think homeownership can play a really important role in a situation like that of helping long-term residents benefit from big public investment projects. So I think, you know, it's gentrification can be good if you're a homeowner, but if you're being displaced by it due to rising costs and rising rents, it's a negative.
It would be nice to see more of those projects in those neighborhoods. That's one of the answers here, too. I know that there have been some talk of perhaps some new investment tax credits for developments like that in underperforming neighborhoods and neighborhoods around the state, around the country. That could be possibly a decent answer as well to some of this.
Yeah, I mean, I think in areas, the history of segregation and disinvestment in American cities is a pretty complicated one to get into, but it's significant. So strategies that do invest in those neighborhoods and attract new investment to those neighborhoods is really important. The challenges in those neighborhoods are not simply housing related. They're broader investment, broader challenges. But I think the key when you invest in those areas is to create opportunities for existing residents who've lived there for a long time so that they can take advantage of neighborhood improvements that are a result of those investments. So I think, A, the investment is important, but B, making sure that you're taking care of the folks who've lived there for a long time is also really important. So it's got to be inclusive and balanced in that way as well.
Jeff, what would be some good resources for folks if they're listening this morning in a situation that we've been describing? Are there resources that can point them in the right direction?
Sure. There's a great organization in Chicago that's very active in neighborhoods across the city called Neighborhood Housing Services. They're a partner that we at IHS work with quite regularly. They provide housing counseling for folks who are, you know, looking to get a mortgage and maybe need some advice on how to prepare for that mortgage. They actually make loans to certain to borrowers who qualify for loans. So I think that an organization like NHS, Neighborhood Housing Services, is a great first step for folks who are interested in potentially getting a loan.
All right. Jeff, we appreciate you being with us this morning. Good information. Thank you.
Thank you.
Jeff Smith, the executive director of the Institute for housing studies at DePaul University.
Hi, this is Jim Dahlke, senior editor at Chicago Inno, with today's Inno Minute on WGN Radio, a rundown of all the Chicago innovation and tech news you need to know, presented by the 1871 Momentum Awards. Chicago Blend is a new effort by venture capitalists in Chicago to measure and increase diversity in Chicago VC firms and the startups that they back. The goal is to compile data so that the industry can fully understand the diversity challenge in front of it and develop strategies to improve the number of women and minorities at both local VC firms and startup. And Elon Musk says his Hyperloop test tunnel in California will open in less than 2 months. It's a significant milestone in bringing the futuristic transportation technology to life, as Musk's Boring Company is working on underground high-speed transit projects in L.A. and Chicago. That's today's Inno Minute from WGN Radio. Learn more at chicagoinno.com and sign up for The Beat, our daily email newsletter.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning again, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Tuesday edition of The Opening Bell. It's the business of auctions, the focus of this segment, auto auctions specifically. If you are an auto person, you know that Mecum Auctions really sets the standards for auto auctions. And David Mayer, the CEO of Mecum Auctions, is with us this morning. David, good morning. Welcome to The Opening Bell.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Rich history goes back many years. How's your business going these days?
Well, right now, it couldn't be going any better, I don't think. The collector car business is just red hot. We're getting ready here in Chicago to have our 11th event out of 14 this year across the country. And in the first 10 events, we set event records in 7 of those 10 events. And when I say we set a record, we blew by the old records by an average of 28%.
Congratulations on that. What's driving this? It's just people are nuts about their cars, aren't they?
Yeah, I think there's a number of things. Number one, having a strong economy never hurts. And, you know, but I think people are feeling pretty good about themselves and their personal finances and disposable income. And you know, finally, there's some money that can be freed up to do some things for themselves. And, you know, we all have dreams about collector cars. I think throughout our entire life, probably starts when we're about 12 years old. But then we also, as a company, have made some pretty significant investments in our brand over the last 3 or 4 years, including some significant investments in our television programming. And I think all of that combined is driving big crowds. They're all wearing bidder badges. Cars are bringing great numbers, and we're seeing probably a 20% to 30% increase in the number of cars that come to our collector car auctions this year.
Well, David, let's talk about the TV part of this because it's very interesting. It's NBC, I think, Sports Network carries this. I think this is an event. People go to this for the event to watch this. It's very cool to watch. What's the fueling? What's fueling this? Do you think the interest on television?
Well, I always say it's much of an addicting show. Well, you know, once you turn it on and you see a couple of cars, you want to see the next one. You want to see the next one. You want to see the next one. And our TV viewing audiences continue to grow. We're in our fourth year now with NBC Sports Network and NBC. And as a matter of fact, I just had a conversation with them 2 weeks ago, and we're going to extend our TV contract for 6 years. So it's going very well for us. It's going very well for the NBC family of networks, and it's creating a new base of customer for us, I think, and maybe some that didn't even know they were collector car enthusiasts, you know, stick and ball kinds of people that are now seeing car shows for the first time. And I would say I probably talk to 100 to 200 people at every event that we go to that say, I've seen this on TV, I just had to come see it in person.
Yeah, that's good to hear. You know, we've been talking a lot about collector cars here, but it's about more than that as well. I mean, it's motorcycles and tractors and all kinds of automotive equipment, isn't it?
Yeah, and actually, obviously the auction of vehicles and collector vehicles is at the core of what we do. But when I describe our company, I describe our company as an entertainment company, not an auction company. Because we are about an event that happens to be an auction as opposed to an auction itself. There's a lot going on at our auctions, and even here in Chicago with Blackhawks Day coming up at Mecum Auctions on Friday, and we have Illinois State University Day, and there's just a lot going on. You don't have to be looking to buy or sell a car to come to one of our events to you know, have a great time looking at 1,000 beautiful collector cars and having a lot of interactive things to do with our sponsors.
For those of us who haven't been to a lot of these, tell us something that we perhaps do not know about a Mecum auction.
Well, you probably get the gist of it when you see it on TV. It's we're loud, we're fast, we're exciting. It's just a lot of fun. But if you've only seen it on TV, what you don't get is the magnitude of the event, how large it actually is, because you're getting that center picture of the stage. And you don't see what it looks like to have 1,000 shiny, beautiful, you know, 50-year-old cars sitting on the floor. So I think that the one thing most people don't realize is it's not just a car auction, it's a car show. So it's a great event to, you know, pack up the kids, bring out the family, you know, teach your kids about history and about your personal history through cars that happen to be there.
Let's talk a little bit about the 2018 Chicago Collector Car Auction. Again, October 25th through the 27th, it's going to be at the Renaissance Schaumburg Convention Center. What are the highlights of the auction, the kinds of vehicles that will be there?
Well, our corporate offices are in southern Wisconsin, and I actually live downtown Chicago. So this is somewhat of a home game for us. We're always really excited to have an event in Chicago. But this year, I think particularly so, because the cream of the crop, probably the star of the show, is Walter Payton's 1979 Porsche 930 Turbo, the first sports car that Walter ever bought in his professional career in 1979. He owned the car for 20 years until he died in 1999. And his son, Jarrett, has had the car ever since. So it's never left the Payton family, and it's coming up for auction on Saturday at our event.
What does the bidding on something like that start out at?
You know, that one is really hard to say because, you know, the history and the provenance and the ownership and the fact that it's never left the family, you just never know what something like that brings. The car will bring more for celebrity value than it will for the value of the car. But it will no doubt be in the hundreds of thousands of dollars.
The other headliner of the event is the McDonald's Classics Collection.
Yeah.
These are some nice, beautiful old automobiles, some of them that were actually displayed at McDonald's stores.
Yeah, there's four cars from the McDonald's Classics, and as you can imagine, they're in pristine condition. And they came from the museum at the displaying store number one, and they've been on display there for a great many years. So again, another really strong connection to Chicago and McDonald's for our home game here.
There's an Oldsmobile, the Delta 88, a Chrysler, New Yorker, St. Regis, a Bel Air, Crown Victoria. These are some beautiful cars. I'm looking at them online. And that's where people can go to kind of get a sense of what's going to be at this auction, right?
Yeah, Mecum.com will tell you everything you need to know about the auction, from, you know, advanced bidder registration, advanced ticket purchase, which, by the way, are both cheaper than when you come to the auction to do that in person. There's a complete lineup of the cars with beautiful pictures and descriptions. Everything you need to know about the auction is at Mecum.com.
And again, this is starting Thursday, October 25th, so just a couple days away through the 27th. And back to the NBC part of this, a lot of this is going to be live on TV and online.
Yeah, we'll have a little over 20 hours of either live or what's called same-day delay, which I particularly like same-day delay, where we film in the afternoon, but then it shows in prime time in the evening. So we'll have great coverage not only for the Mecum auction, but when we come to a city with our event, we like to highlight the city as well. So it'll be great coverage for Chicago and great coverage for Mecum and the auction and the event.
David, what is in the future? I know you got your eyes set on getting this out of the way, this event, and doing it well. But what if you had to look into your crystal ball, what is in the future for Mecum?
Well, you know, we kind of never quit on our auctions. We have 14 car auctions a year, 2 motorcycle, 2 antique tractor, and 2 what we call road art. So we're always looking forward to the next event. Right now, we can't look too much further than our January event in Kissimmee, Florida. That is the world's largest collector car auction. It lasts for 10 days, and there'll be around 3,500 cars at that auction. So you can get a feel for how big that is, even compared to, you know, a Chicago auction, which is massive. So we're always looking for the next auction, but longer term in the future, We're looking to build out the entertainment value of our business, to take the strength of our brand in the automotive environment and look for other ways to build entertainment around that brand, either through television programming, through digital programming, you know, things like podcasts, social media, however we might be able to do that. We're looking to expand into the into a broader automotive network.
All right. Well, David, we wish you and everybody at Mecum the very best, and can't wait for this auction again, the 25th through the 27th out at the Renaissance Schaumburg Convention Center. And thanks for being with us here this morning.
Well, thank you. I hope to see you out there.
All right. Thank you very much. David Mayer, the CEO of Mecum Auctions. Again, you can find out more about it. We'll link out to in our podcast of the opening bell a little bit later this morning. But Mecum.com is the website. And we'll link out to this special event, too, in the podcast of The Opening Bell later this morning.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures pointing toward opening losses later this morning on Wall Street. Triple-digit losses, as a matter of fact. Dow futures are down 272 points. NASDAQ futures down more than 100 points, off nearly 1.5%. S&P futures off about 1.25% this morning. Now the latest on agriculture and commodities. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. Cattle and hog futures moved higher on Monday, bouncing back from Friday's decline as traders took a look at government reports that showed supplies, while remaining abundant, were less than expected. So at the end of the day, the February lean hog contract was up $1.35 a hundredweight, the December live cattle contract up $1.50, and the November cattle feeder cattle contract up $2.90. And corn and soybeans moved higher yesterday at the Board of Trade over some weather concerns. Talk about rains coming back to the Midwest next week. And so at the end of the day, the December corn contract was up 2.5 cents, the November soybean contract up 1.5 cents, but December wheat was down 6.5 cents. What about harvest progress? Well, the report came out yesterday showing 49% of the nation's corn acres harvested, 53% of the soybean acres harvested. Illinois leading in both categories, 82% of corn and 74% of soybeans harvested. Iowa with only 37% of the soybeans and 29% of the corn crop harvested. Tomorrow, the National FFA Convention gets underway in Indianapolis. As I said at noon yesterday, if you have a business trip to Indianapolis this week and you do not have a hotel reservation, I suggest you change your business trip dates. You have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Tuesday, October the 23rd. The Red Book due out today, also the Richmond Fed Manufacturing Index. Fed Speaker Neil Kashkari out there today, Charles Evans and Robert Kaplan, Rafael Bostic as well on monetary policy. And the Fed will watch those speeches. They could move the markets. Also today, a big day for three earnings, including some Chicago companies, McDonald's in there, Caterpillar as well, 3M, JetBlue, Six Flags, Sprint, Las Vegas Sands, CAA Technologies, Lockheed Martin, Verizon, and Harley-Davidson all reporting quarterly earnings today. Just some of the things that could move the markets on this Tuesday, October the 23rd.